So this is going to be a bit of a sermon and a half. I don't mean that like, oh, this is a great sermon. This is like a sermon and a half. Just more, I wanted to frame chapter 30 in what had happened before. So we're going to re-look over some of 27 and a bit of 28 just to frame what's going on in 30, and because I think that gives a bigger, fuller picture of actually where David is at. So we're going to start at 1 Samuel 27. So obviously before this, David again, 26, as you can see, David spares Saul's life again. This ongoing feud between the two of where Saul basically had lost God's anointing, and he wasn't tremendously happy about it, as you can expect. And David was like, well, I know the promise is coming. It's just a shame this guy wants to keep killing me, sort of thing. And then we see this ongoing journey of these two people in some very random things, just God working through those situations and how actually God's promise is true all the way through that. And again, we see this point where they're in very close proximity. Saul doesn't realize it. And again, David's like, look, I've honored your life. I've honored that you're my king, even though I know I'm the next king, even though you want to kill me. And we get to 27, and we start with a but. But David thought to himself, one of these days I shall be destroyed by the hand of Saul. The best thing I can do is to escape to the land of the Philistines. Then Saul will give up searching for me anywhere in Israel, and I will slip out of his hand. So David and his 600 men with him left and went over to Achish, son of Maok, king of Gath. And they settled in Gath with Achish. Each man had his family with him, and David had his two wives, Ahinoam of Jezreel and Abigail of Carmel, the widow of Nabal. When Saul was told that David had fled to Gath, he no longer searched for him. So David's like, do you know what? I'm sick of this. I'm getting a bit frustrated. Look, yes, I get it. God has done a mighty thing, but actually I'm tired. I'm frustrated. I'm a little bit miffed. And actually, I want a break. I'm going to go over to the place that I know Saul isn't going to get me. If I go over to the Philistines, he won't bother because he knows that it'll start a war. And Saul doesn't want a war with the Philistines. He just wants David gone. And that's what happens. So David goes over there. I'm not going to read much more of 27 because obviously Matt's preached about it 2 weeks ago. And basically, he finds favour in Achish's eyes, gets to go and live at Ziklag, which is, as Matt had said, was actually part of God's promised land for Israel. So God, even though he used this angry, frustrated man, actually brought about God's plan for Israel, and Ziklag became part of Israel's territory, which was a fulfillment of a promise. And David, verse 7, David lived in Philistine territory for a year and 4 months. So I'll skip 8. This is an important verse. Whenever David attacked an area, he did not leave a man or woman alive, but took sheep and cattle, donkeys and camels and clothes, then returned to Achish. And then when Achish asked, where did you go today? David would say, well, I went to Negev of Judah, I went to Negev of Jeremiel, and against the Negev of Kenites. He did not leave a man or woman alive to be brought to Gath, for he thought they might inform on me and say, this is what David did. And such was his practice as long as he lived in Philistines' territory. Achish trusted David and said to himself, he has become so obnoxious to his people, the Israelites, that he will be my servant of life. Now these are key verses in what I'm about to say, because A, that was not normal practice, right? As we'll see, you don't go, oh, I'm going to attack these people and then wipe them out. That wasn't the thing to do. And why did he do that? He did that because he didn't want anybody to tell that he'd gone and he basically was just going, do you know what? I fancy going attacking those people. I'm a bit annoyed. I'm frustrated. I'm going to get my anger out. I'm quite good at this. Let's go and do it. Sort of thing. But actually, I'm going to wipe out everybody and just plunder them. And this wasn't natural practice, which we see in verse 12. Achish trusted David and said to himself, he has become so obnoxious to his people, the Israelites, that he will be my servant for life. So Achish was like, this guy is so not doing what the normal Israelites do, that actually they'll just be like, we don't want anything more to do with him. We don't want David our king. Have you seen what he's done? He's horrendous. And Achish was like, this guy is going to be my servant. He's going to be my bodyguard. I know he's pretty, him and his 600 men are pretty good at fighting. They're excellent. And do you know what? They'll look after me. I'm sorted here because these guys will look after me. Israel will no longer want him because of what he's done. Because he let his frustration get to him. And he just went, sack this, I'm just going to go off and do what I want to do. And then chapter 28, obviously the Philistines come and start going, we're going to attack Israel. And they go, wait a minute, who's this guy? We don't want him. He's got a bit of a reputation, mainly against us. So, right, you can clear off. Saul goes... I keep wanting to say the Ewok of Endor, but the medium at Endor, that was a Star Wars reference, nobody got it. And the key verse for this, now Samuel was dead. Basically, there was no prophet. The voice of God. It wasn't like this day where you could just go, well, I'm just going to go down to church, I'm just going to read my Bible, I'm just going to do this or do that. There was none of that. Even like temple wise there was one. You couldn't like, and sometimes that was a long journey away, and it wasn't like you could just get your Google Maps out and drive, sort of thing. Actually, if you wanted to have that relationship with God, it took a lot of effort. And actually to hear from God took even more. There was no prophet. Samuel had died. And we see David frustrated with the situation, knowing that actually Samuel, he hasn't got Samuel there to go, look, I'm really struggling, give me some advice. And then obviously, as was brought last week, we see Saul go, do you know what, I'm really struggling for advice, do you know what, I'll go and see a medium, and she'll bring Samuel back for me, which was obviously the worst thing you could do. And then we get to our actual passage. So I will read this and then we will go through it. So chapter 30. David and his men reached Ziklag on the third day. Now the Amalekites had raided the Negev and Ziklag. They had attacked Ziklag and burned it, and had taken captive the women and everyone else in it, both young and old. They killed none of them, but carried them off as they went on their way. When David and his men reached Ziklag, they found it destroyed by fire, and their wives and sons and daughters taken captive. So David and his men wept aloud until they had no strength left to weep. David's two wives had been captured, Ahinoam of Jezreel and Abigail, the widow of Nabal of Carmel. David was greatly distressed because the men were talking of stoning him. Each one was bitter in spirit because of his sons and daughters, but David found strength in the Lord his God. Then David said to Abiathar the priest, the son of Ahimelech, bring me the ephod. Abiathar brought it to him, and David inquired of the Lord, Shall I pursue this raiding party? Will I overtake them? Pursue them, he answered. You will certainly overtake them and succeed in the rescue. David and his 600 men with him came to the Besor Valley, where some stayed behind. 200 of them were too exhausted to cross the valley, but David and the other 400 continued the pursuit. They found an Egyptian in a field and brought him to David. They gave him water to drink and food to eat, part of a cake of pressed figs and 2 cakes of raisins. He ate and was revived, for he had not eaten any food or drunk any water for 3 days and nights. David asked him, "Who do you belong to? Where do you come from?" He said, "I am an Egyptian, the slave and of Amalekite. My master abandoned me when I became ill 3 days ago. We raided the Negev of the Kerethites, some territory belonging to Judah, and the Negev of Caleb, and we burned Ziklag." David asked him, "Can you lead me down to this raiding party?" He answered, "Swear to me before God that you will not kill me or hand me over to my master, and I will take you down to them." He led David down, and there they were scattered over the countryside, eating, drinking, and reveling because of the great amount of plunder they had taken from the land of the Philistines and from Judah. David fought them from dusk until evening of the next day, and none of them got away except 400 young men who rode off on camels and fled. David recovered everything the Amalekites had taken, including his 2 wives. Nothing was missing, young or old, boy or girl, plunder or anything else they had taken. David brought everything back. He took all the flocks and herds, and his men drove them ahead of the other livestock, saying, "This is David's plunder." Then David came to the 200 men who had been too exhausted to follow him and who were left behind at the Besor Valley. They came out to meet David and the men with him. As David and his men approached, he asked them how they were. But all the evil men and troublemakers among David's followers said, "Because they did not go out with us, we will not share with them the plunder we recovered. However, each man may take his wife and children and go." David replied, "No, my brothers, you must not do that with what the Lord has given us. He has protected us and delivered us, delivered into our hands the raiding party that came against us. Who will listen to what you say? The share of the man who stayed with the supplies is to be the same as that of him who went down to the battle. All shall share alike." David made this a statute and ordinance for Israel from that day to this. When David reached Ziklag, he sent some of the plunder to the elders of Judah, who were his friends, saying, "Here is a gift for you from the plunder of the Lord's enemies." David sent it to those who were in Bethel, Ramoth, Negev, and Jetir, to those in Arioh, Siphmoth, Eshtemoah, and Rakal, to those in the towns of the Jeremite, Melites, and the Kenanites, to those of Homer, Bor-Ashan, Athak, and Hebron, and to those in all other places where he and his men had roamed. So, some big names there. I'm sure I got a couple of them wrong. So David's, as I'd said before, he's been frustrated. He's not been doing the right thing. He knew the promise of God was there on his life, and life had overtook him, and he was like, "Do you know what? Even though I've had this great victory, and actually I could have took Saul's life but didn't, I'm just getting frustrated. I need a break. I need a rest. I need to do something else. I can't carry on like this." He completely forgot the song Jesus. Well, not that you'd have had Jesus strong and kind, but when we come to him when we thirst, when we're hungry, when we need rest, who do we go to? Jesus. But how many times do we not we look in ourselves and go, I can't cope. I can't do this anymore. Do you know what? Sack it. I just need a break. I just need to go and do something else. I just need to do whatever it is and fill in the blank. And just because that promise of God, even though we've seen God move in our lives time after time, we just say, oh, I just, it's just not, it doesn't feel that close. It just doesn't feel like it's coming. And so he'd gone off into the enemies and went, I'm going to get a break here. Obviously, took his frustrations out and then got sent back. So him and his 600 men on the way back home, he's probably feeling pretty unhappy about the whole situation. He's thinking, oh, I could have gone with the Philistines. We could have gone in. We could have killed Saul, and they've gone, hey, David's the king. Yeah, brill, brill. Nope, not me. That's not God's plan. So he goes back, and I'm sure you can all, you all know that if you put something on fire, it lets off smoke, doesn't it? And I'm guessing if you set a town on fire, not that I've ever seen, thankfully, a town on fire, but obviously in America currently there is these wildfires, and if anybody's seen the videos, the flames are like massive and the smoke. So these guys, as they're walking home, would have been like, where's home? Oh, it's over there. What's going on? Sort of thing. And they would have seen the smoke rise from Ziklag, and they'd have been like, what is that? And they'd have rushed home, worried, because they couldn't, there was no mobile, it's mental how close we are to, I can ring somebody in Australia, I can ring somebody in America, and I can email them, and sometimes I think we forget how culturally different this world was. Even somebody like 20 miles down the road, they had to, if you wanted to get there fast, if you wanted to know where you're going, you had to run or get a donkey, which I'm guessing if you can run fast, you'd probably beat the donkey. Sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't, that was the state of play. So they could see in front of them something was going on, and they will have been rushing, and they'd have been worried. They'd have been going, something is going on here. We don't know what. I'm slightly scared. It looks like smoke. Let's hope they're just having a big bonfire and a bit of dancing and got some marshmallows out. And he gets there, and they burned it. And they'd taken captive the women and everyone else in it. So everybody had gone, young and old, killed none of them, carried them all off. So not only was it a burning husk, it was an empty burning husk. There was nobody about. They'd left no survivors to go, oh, it was these people that had done it. Everybody had gone. All the possessions had gone. All the families had gone. Everything had gone. So when David and his men reached Ziklag, they found it destroyed by fire and their wives and sons and daughters taken captive. So David and his men wept aloud until they had no strength left to weep. They wept aloud. Such was the pain that was in their hearts that actually they'd lost so much. And I'm guessing a lot of you here have been in that place where actually you've lost something so dear to you, and actually you just don't, all you can do is cry, all you can do is weep and just go, what is going on? What can I do now? I don't know what to say, I don't know what to think, I don't know what to do, all I can do is cry. Such is the pain and heartache in my heart. And then, as is normally what happens after a big, the fingers come out. Well, whose fault's this? Who's this done this? David was greatly distressed because the men were talking of stoning him. So not only had David come, all his family had gone, all his possessions gone, he's like, oh God, oh man, this is just not my week. This is not happening for me. Then his 600 men are going, wait a minute, this is your fault. This is on you. You did this. And sometimes as a leader, the fingers do get pointed at you, even when it's not your fault. You can be hurting as much as everybody else. But ultimately, as a leader, you've got to take responsibility. You've got to stand out front and take the flak. And that hurts. I've been there, and some of you will have been there, and that does hurt. Because you're like, well, I don't know what's going on. And the guys were like, look, this is all on you. You've done this to us. You wanted to go off to war and kill all these people. You wanted to go and go to war with us. We could have stayed here. We'd have been fine. This wouldn't have happened to us. Right, we're going to kill you. We're going to get rid of you. And for me, and I'm sure a lot of you have been here, and I've definitely been here, this was the turning point for David. He came to the end of himself. He came to the end of his rational line of thought. And what I mean by that is, he had gone, I have no idea what is next. I need somebody greater than me to tell me what to do next. And he remembered the Lord. He remembered that ultimately, God is for us, not against us. Even though he in his head could have gone, I am such an idiot. I have done this wrong, this wrong, this wrong, this wrong, this wrong. And to a degree, the fingers would have been pointing at him, it is my fault we're here. And to a degree it was. But actually he remembered who God was. That actually, God still loved him. God wasn't going to forsake him. And God was for him. And he, I love how it says this in the, but David found strength in the Lord his God. His faith was enriched. He remembered who God was. He went, do you know what? I'm rubbish. I'm nothing. But I know God is everything. I know in my own strength, I can do nothing here. I can't. I don't know where they've gone. I don't know who it is. I'm hurting. All my people want to kill me. My family's gone. All my possessions gone. I just want to weep and cry. I probably want to die myself. But actually, God is bigger than me. I can do this not in my strength, but in his strength. In his power, not in my power. And he remembered. And then we see, right, Samuel's not around. I can't go and see Samuel and go, Samuel, I need... what can I do? So he gets the ephod. Now the ephod was a priestly garment. It was very, I'm not going to go, you can Google it after the service, obviously. Was a priestly garment, and it was very intricate. Had a lot of stuff in it that was about what the faithfulness of God, what God had done, about his people Israel, and what they did. And he was like, look, I need, the priest can talk to God. I need a connection. I need to reconnect with God. Samuel's not here. I need something to do. So he was like, right. And I believe, led by the Spirit, he went, right, let's get the ephod. Okay, priest, bring me the ephod. Puts on the ephod. Right, God, I'm sorry. Can we go and get these people? Can I go and get the stuff back? And God says, yeah, pursue them. Will I overtake them? Yes, pursue them. You will certainly overtake them and succeed in the rescue. So he's like, right, let's go. Come on, lads, 600 of you. Let's go. And they get to the Besor Valley. And obviously these guys had had a rough ride as well. And 200 of them are going, look, I can't go any further. I just need a rest. And do you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. It's good to be honest. There's times in our lives, in our Christian lives, when we need to say, things are overtaking me. Things are getting out of hand and I need to take a step back. And these 200 guys were like, look, we want to go, but actually, we can't. We understand we can't go on. We'll stay here, we'll look after some supplies, go on. We'll lighten the load for you, but actually, we can't go all the way. And there's nothing wrong with that. And sometimes I think in church we think, oh, it's great, we're doing this evangelistic event, we're doing this evangelistic event, we're doing this meeting, and it just becomes a checklist of we need to do this. That's not right. The reality is, you need to do what God is calling you to do. The church, this church and whichever church you go to, will do loads of things, and it doesn't expect you to be at everything, because it knows you're only human. It knows that, yeah, God will provide when we're tired. And trust me, I am tired. But actually, that we're human, and God, we need to look after ourselves. And that actually, we need to do what God wants us to do. It's so easy to think, well, I'm not that great a Christian. I can't go and evangelize on the streets. I'm not that great a Christian. I can't preach from the front, or I can't be at a house group, or I can't lead a house group, or fill in the blank, whatever's in your head. But that doesn't make you any lesser of a Christian. Knowing your limits is what makes you you. You've got strengths, gifts and abilities that other people in this room do not have. We are a jigsaw puzzle. We are not all the same. We create a picture of God's family on earth. Right? As it says, we are the body of Christ. If I was a big leg, that'd be all right for hopping, but it wouldn't be very good at seeing. Do you know what I mean? Ultimately, you are a part of a body. You are not the body. Know your limits. And don't beat yourself up if you're going, I can't do that. That is beyond me. That isn't my skill set. That isn't my gift set. That's completely fine, because someone else is. Okay? And I can't reach and grab things. A foot can't speak. Etc, etc. Okay, so they left the 200 and the 401, went off, and as they were going, obviously they were heading in general direction. They were still a bit like, we haven't got Google Maps, we don't really know where we're going, we'll just go where the Lord leads us. They meet an Egyptian, which is obviously normal. And they were a bit like, oh, is this Egyptian here? Oh, right, okay, right. How's he doing? He's not doing very well. He hasn't eaten and drank for 3 days. But so they go, well, here you go. Here's a feast. Not that dates and raisins are my thing. But they give him a lot of food and drink and just look after him and care for him. And actually, we see God's hand in this, that as they did to him as God would want them to do, God used the Egyptian to bring about God's promise. So obviously this Egyptian was a servant of the Amalekite, and David was like, right, you can take us down. You can lead us. We've now got our guide. We know where we're going. We know where they're going to be. And he's like, whoa, wait a minute. You're not going to kill me, are you? You're not going to like hand me back. I don't really like the Amalekites. They've been nasty to me. They like left me for 3 days, and they're like, no, it's fine. God loves you. We love you. You're going to help us. You're part of God's provision for us. Let's go. So then, down they go. He led David down, and there they were, scattered over the countryside, eating, drinking, and reveling because of the great amount of plunder they had taken from the land of the Philistines and from Judah. David fought them from dusk until the evening of the next day. So, a long time. It was not a quick and easy battle. And none of them got away apart from 400 who rode on camels. So if you think, there's only 401 Israelites, David, there's only 401 people with David, and actually they were scattered across the countryside. So when you're driving in the hills and you're driving to Whitby and you see the lovely things before you see that, like they were scattered, there would have been thousands, hundreds of thousands of them. And actually, it didn't matter how big that problem looked, David knew God was with him. And that God had, even though David had sinned, and David had got to a point of doing things his own way, God had brought it back and used David to show who is really in control. And so they bring it all back, and then they get back to the 200 who had stayed, and David and his men approached and asked them how they were. So David's like, how are you doing, lads? Are you feeling better? Yeah. It's a nice sunny day. You've been enjoying it. You've rested up. But, and then people come and go, whoa, wait a minute. look, they're not having any of this. This is ours. We went and fought them. We did the hard work. They sat there, didn't out. Right? It's ours. It's not theirs. They can have the kids. Go on. Off. Off with you. I've done this. I've earned this. The reality is, who'd done it? Who'd earned it? Was it them? No. God. God had worked a miracle and they still wanted the credit. They still wanted to say, look what we've done. There's only 400 of us. We killed all them. Apart from the 400 who got on camels. All this. This is ours. You did nothing. Well, actually, they'd been used by God, but actually it wasn't their strength and power. It was God using them. And it was that miracle that had worked through. And we need to share in our victories with each other, especially as Christian brothers and sisters. For those people who are strong prayer warriors, who you may not see in the youth work, who you may not see doing Sunday school, we need to share our victories for those youth that are coming on in Christ, for those people, those discussions we meet at work or ever. We need to share our victories because we're all in this together. As I said, if there's nothing, there's no harm in resting if you need to rest. There's no harm in going, do you know what? I can't do anything other than pray. Great. Use that gift. Pray for those who are doing the youth work. Pray for those who are doing the evangelism. Pray for those who are going to work and talking to people. But actually, for those that are doing the youth work and thingy, share the victories with them. Because all work's important. Just because I'm up here preaching and I wrote the back bit on the Hardwick Happenings, that doesn't make me any better than you. That doesn't mean that I'm more special than you are. I'm not. The victory is for all of us. When we see people come to Christ, it's not going, oh, look what Dennis did. He talked to that person. He's come to Christ. Isn't Dennis amazing? No. We celebrate with the angels in heaven. It's a shared victory. And we need to remember that. We need to remember that everybody in this church is all working together for God's good. So he sorts that out, and actually he said, look, this is how it's going to be from now until the end. This is not a one-time thing. This is set in stone now. This is how it works. If you can't go, and we come back with loads of plunder, you're still getting your part. So when David reached Ziklag, he sent some of the plunder to the elders of Judah, who were his friends, saying, here's a gift from you, from the plunder of Lord's enemies. I'm not going to read out the long list of names that I'll probably get wrong. But basically, David had this big, he had the bigger picture. You had these guys who were like, well, I've done the work. I should get the credit. I should get that extra bit of gold or the extra ewe or the camel. Because I did it. I was out there fighting. And David's like, no. And God has blessed us. God has used us to do great things. And I'm going to bless other people. I'm going to share in what God has provided. And you might not be a Christian tonight, and you might be thinking, what on earth is this guy talking about? But the reality is that if you're not a Christian tonight, I can bet you've had times where you've had hurt and pain in your life, where you've come to the end of yourself and all you could do is cry or get to your knees and go, I don't know what to do next. And actually what we see from this passage is that God is for us. That so much so that he sent Jesus to die on a cross in our place when we truly repent and go, do you know what? I can't do this anymore. I can't do this. I don't know what the next step is because I have come to the end of myself. I have realized my limitations. I have realized I'm not as good as I thought I was. I'm not as clever as I thought I was. And actually, I need help. And God is going, I have sent all that help to you. I want to bring back that relationship between me and you so much so that I have paid the price for everything that you've done wrong. And so if you're not a Christian tonight, let me tell you, and it doesn't matter how much wrong you think you've done. You could have a long list. Mine's a long list, tell me that. And you might think, well, this is the longest list in here, and some of those things are horrendous. But the reality is that, as we see with David, he'd done lots of horrible things, and he'd done lots of horrible things before that sort of thing. But actually, God used him to do great things. And that actually God was for him. And that it didn't matter how much wrong he did. When he turned to God, when he saw who God was and his deep need for God, God was there with open arms to accept him back when he asked for forgiveness. And if you're a Christian, just let me encourage you that we are the body. You might be sat here thinking, I don't do a lot in church. All I do is pray. All I do is make the tea. Well done. Because you're part of what we're doing here. If you can't go out and evangelize, that's fine. If you can't do the youth work, that's fine. If you can't do the Sunday school, that is fine. If God is calling you to do those things, do them. Because he'll equip you to do them. But actually, we need to share our victories with you. We need to see what God is doing in this place and share that victory with each one of us. On Wednesday, that's part of what was happening with this. It's that sharing of the victories of all these churches that we're working together with. And you might think, well, I don't really feel part of that, but we are. So let me encourage you. Know you are loved and that you have gifts and abilities. And no matter how frustrated or tired or angry or sad or upset or whatever you are, God is still for you. And he is still stood there with arms open wide.